The founder of the Brain Performance Center has three tips to make sure your brain stays healthy and doesn't break. Don't miss Dr. Lee Richardson today on Driven by Purpose.
This is Driven by Purpose, a show about finding your purpose, building fulfilling careers, and helping people with disabilities live better lives. Hosted by three men who've lived it and are here to help you do the same. Special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Clean Logic, a leading bath and skincare company and a true pioneer in creating inclusive workplaces and increasing employment opportunities for people with disabilities.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Driven by Purpose. My name is Evan Rosenblum, along with the co-founders of Clean Logic and the Inspiration Foundation, Mike Gesser. What's going on, Mike?
How you doing, Evan?
And Isaac Shapiro. How are you, Isaac?
I'm wonderful, Evan.
And today, we have a very special guest. We're going to talk about brain health, everybody, with somebody who is an expert in the field, Dr. Lee Richardson. She is the founder and clinical director of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. She's also a licensed professional counselor and neurotherapist and the author of Turn Your Brain On to Get Your Game On.
Turn your brain on to get your game on.
She's like, she knows more about the brain than all three of us combined. Dr. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Evan, for having me.
Man, I am so excited to have you here. But first and foremost, like, I would love to hear about exactly, like, what do you guys do at the Brain Performance Center in Dallas? Because I know it's an amazing place, but, like, take us through, like, what the mission is there.
Well, the mission at the Brain Performance Center is to help people with a dysregulated brain. And a dysregulated brain may be somebody with anxiety, with autism, with ADHD, with depression. And put that brain into a regulated state and trying to do that without medication. If medication, the pharmacological remedy works for you, that's great, but it doesn't work for everybody. And so we come at it through a way that we train the brain how to operate in a regulated state. It's very non-invasive. It's all ages love it. It's very inviting, and it feels so good to the brain when you're creating neuroplasticity. The brain's like, oh, that feels so good. Bring it on. And using neuromodulation is a fun job.
Yes. So what does that look like exactly? Like regulating the brain without medication? And I'm not saying default to it, but like describe that to me a little bit, please.
So the first thing that you do when people come, we do an assessment and we'll map that brain two ways. First, we'll look at the neuroplasticity in the brain, because neuroplasticity is what gives the brain the ability to be adaptable, to be flexible. And my technical question to people is, do you ever feel like your brain is stuck? And you'd be surprised how immediate answer I get to that. It's like, yeah. So that you need some neuroplasticity. And then we'll put a cap on your head and we'll record 20 minutes worth of data, eyes open and eyes closed. And I'll go through that data and get the good stuff. And it can be harder than you think to get the good stuff. Because if you blink a lot, you're creating all kinds of artifact in your prefrontal cortex. If you grit your teeth, you're affecting the temporal lobe. So like to have lots to pick from. And from that data, I understand how I can what that brain needs and how we can train it to make the changes.
So when we talk about neuroplasticity, my experience with it is, you know, my daughter was born at 25 weeks. She has severe cerebral palsy, and she also has bilateral PVL. And bilateral PVL, for those who don't know, it's essentially brain damage. And if you look at her MRI, it looks like a gunshot wound. It's like all sorts of holes through her brain. And, you know, because she had a traumatic birth and there's a lot of stuff going on in her brain. And the reason I talk about it so casually now is my daughter's 10 years old and she's the best thing in the whole wide world. Just big, smiley, amazing kid. But when she was first born and everybody was explaining this to me at the hospital, they were talking about how important it is to get her, you know, all sorts of different kinds of therapies as soon as possible, because they were saying her brain is still malleable and the, you know, different kinds of therapies. It was important to start certain therapies right away to start training her brain pathways and all the neuroplasticity. They kept saying neuroplasticity and all this stuff. Get her pathways going now because her brain can train itself. They were basically saying her brain is like different kinds of freeways. And if there's a block in one of the lanes, the brain can like recreate a lane. It can go around the block and it can still get from point A to point B, but it just won't be in a straight line. And so the brain will train itself to create a different kind of a pathway. And now here she is, my daughter, who had this really severely traumatic brain injury. And now, you know, she's communicating with an AAC device, which is a computer. She can communicate. She understands. She's a really smart kid. And so like, I've fully bought into this idea of neuroplasticity and all of this stuff. So,
same with
for
me.
What it's worth, like I believe in it. I believe it. It's real. I understand it, and I've seen results.
Yeah, that's why I asked the question. Yeah. Like, what does that look like?
You know? So yeah, well, I would love to get before we get into some of this. What I really loved about Dr. Lee is that this wasn't her career from the beginning. She was actually in our industry. So I would love to even. How did you become the expert, and what inspired you to move down this path and working in this field?
Well, it's nice you guys are talking about your daughter. I get to talk about one of my sons. When my son was in the second grade, he got hit by a car. And the other son was with me and watched it happen.
Honestly,
I didn't know who I was more worried about, the one that got hit or the one that saw it. We went to the emergency room and got through that and went home. And they said, if this doesn't happen, everything's fine. Well, nothing happened until 3 years later. When I came home from work one day and the one that got hit said, sit down, Mom. I need to talk to you. I'm like, sure. What do you want to talk about? He said, Mom, my brain is broke. Oh, honey, fifth grade's a really hard year. Mom, you're not getting it. And so I sat down and I listened and I'm like, finally, I'm like, how do you know all this? I'm the mom. How do you know all this? And back then, and those boys are 37 now, back then it wasn't very cool for a fifth grader to get on the internet and do research and do his self-diagnosis. He told me he had ADHD and that it made total sense. He couldn't remember. He couldn't focus. And, you know, I said, okay, I respect you and I respect your research. Once I calmed down over the fact that he was on the internet unsupervised, but I said, I've got this. Give this to me. And I went up to the school the next day and I met with a counselor and I gave her the story. And she said, your son doesn't have ADHD. And I said, why do you say that? She said, well, he's never failed anything. He's never been a behavior problem. And I said, well, my son has asked me to help him. I'm going to help him. What can I do to help him? And she said, you can put him on Ritalin. And I said, why would
this
I do
school?
That?
The school's telling you this.
Yes.
Okay.
And I said, why would I do that? You just told me there was nothing wrong with my son. And she said, well, that's the only thing you can do. And I said, and no. And I started looking. And it took me about 6 months to find Dr. Walker. And I took him there and he offered neurofeedback. And I started to see, and the biggest thing that I was worried about was his confidence. Here he is in fifth grade, and he was always a confident young guy, and all of a sudden, he wasn't. I said, man, you're in fifth grade. You don't have to make straight A's, but I want you to feel good about yourself, and I want you to feel, you know, that you can do whatever you want. When I saw that confidence come back, I said, this is important. And at that point in time, I had been in ICU. I had fallen down a flight of stairs, and when I came out of that, out of ICU for after a week, they said, you've lost your sense of smell. You'll never get it back. And at that point in time, those boys were 2 years old. And I said, I'm good. I'm good with that. I have to see and I have to hear. Smell, I'm okay. But there's more associated with the sense of smell than you realize. Emotional memories. Think about Thanksgiving.
Sure.
What do you remember? Yeah. Mm. When you walk in that room.
Already.
And
yeah, right. Yeah.
So, but after a few years, not having that sense of smell, and I lost my sense of taste, and I decided I would do anything to get that back. So I asked Dr. Walker, I said, would you think it would be possible if I could get my sense of smell back? And he said, I don't know. I said, well, I'm here twice a week with him. I'd like to try. And guess what?
It worked.
I did. Wow. I did. I was so excited that I think 2 or 3 days after I realized that it was back, I started my plan. And my plan was, I'm going to go up to UNT and do didactic training and neurofeedback. Then I'm going to get board certified. But in order to do that, you have to have an internship. So I'm going to work that out with Dr. Walker. And then I'm probably going to go to work for him. And that's exactly what happened. I called him in one day and I said, Dr. Walker, sit down. Got some good stuff to talk about. And I laid it out and he's just like, okay.
You talk about, you know, this show is called Driven by Purpose. And when you get inspired by something and it hits, especially for you, Dr. Lee, man, it just, that was that moment where you just knew that you were driven to do something, huh?
You did it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And the story gets even better. So I worked for him until 2009. Then I go back into ICU with a brain bleed.
Oh my gosh.
I had just completed, I worked for John during the day and I went to grad school at night. And I had just completed grad school for counseling. All I had to do was take that national licensing exam. I came out of ICU and I realized I still knew I could go to work. I knew what I was doing. But short-term memory, not so good. And I thought, okay, I know what helped me the first time. So I started researching. All new technology had come out. And so I put together another plan for Dr. Walker, although this one didn't go as successful as the first one did. But I said, I found new technology and we need to buy it. I'll learn it. I'll train everybody. And he just sat there, no. And I said, why not? He said, that's very expensive. And it was very expensive. And he said, I don't want to have to learn all that all over. You know, I'm not going to do that. And I said, okay. So I decided, well, that's when the Brain Performance Center opened in 2009. I found myself another neurologist and I copied that same model. And I hired a medical director that was a neurologist and started off. And along the way decided that, and obviously it worked because I bought that technology and used it. And along the way I decided, you know, one thing I can tell you, I've worked with a lot of Parkinson's, MS, epilepsy, a lot of traumatic brain injury. They all have either anxiety or depression because of the way that their life has been changed with a disease. And I thought, I'm just going to focus on behavioral health. And that's where my focus is on the depression, anxiety, ADHD, autism. And it's amazing. If you can just calm that brain down, how the quality of life can just change on all levels.
Amazing.
Wow. Amazing. There's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm listening to all the things that you're saying and I'm relating it to how I think my daughter's brain works. And how I'm, because I don't know. It's amazing. Her brain is amazing. But like what you're saying makes so much sense. And I need to know more. Maybe we're going to Dallas. I think I'm going to Dallas.
Well, okay. So
let me finish. Go ahead.
Brings me to my question. So my question is, the majority of people that you see, Dr. Lee, are they children? Are they adults? Like, what do your clients look like?
They range from age 5 to 80. I don't really work with kids below 5 because they can't sit still. And, you know, once they hit around 5 years old and they can sit still because I don't want to train artifact.
Right.
And some of the best success stories have been the young and some of the best success stories have been the old and some in between.
Yeah. Now,
how about those patients that are non-speaking? Like if you are asking them a question or trying to find something out, but you can't get a verbal response or even maybe even an AAC response. How do you get that? What do you do with that data or what data do you use?
So I use the parents a lot as an intervention there because one of the first things in the autistic community, sometimes the goal is just get some speech. I've had moms say, you know, if I could just get a yes or a no, that would give me security. And so I use the parent kind of as an intervention. I watch how they communicate. And then I try to communicate the same way. And I mean, I'm very simple. If you like something, tap the desk. If you don't like something, don't tap the desk. We find a way.
Find a way. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Amazing. And I think one thing that I'm really was excited about this conversation is, you know, how we met Dr. Lee through a wonderful gentleman named Bob Richardson that you might know, Dr. Lee there. And, you know, we were talking at a conference and, you know, trying to get, you know, how we could partner with the organization that he worked with. And he was, well, tell me about the disability work you're doing. And I brought up the 1 in 4 Americans has a disability. And, you know, one of the things is mental health is one of those things. And he said, don't call it mental health. It's brain health on this piece. And we really talked about, you know, that mental health component. But then he brought up ADHD and autism. And I'm like, wait, this is in the disability. So as we're trying to define what mental health is and getting society to be accepting of it, what I really was intrigued with is this brain health. Because what you're telling in your story is that you've been able to find ways to strengthen the brain and how to really do that. But I also know Bob brought up about we all have some piece of mental health and how do we focus on brain health? So could you take us a little bit more around what Bob was talking about? Because that's what resonates me. And I want to say you guys make me really, really smart when I do bring up that brain health. Because what I thought Bob said the best was, we got to change the narrative from mental health to brain health. And that resonates with everybody because it's like, oh, brain health, you're right. Like we all got to be thinking about it. And it's not just that person over here has mental health. Because I think sometimes when you bring up the mental health, like, oh, that person's suicidal or what, that, you know, those things. And we want to change that narrative here.
Absolutely. And you know, that was the biggest stigma, that challenge that I faced was the stigma around brain health. People would come in and they'd do a consultation and I'd say, I think I sense some depression. Oh, no. Or I think I sense some anxiety. I'm not anxious. And I'm like, man, it's okay to not be okay, but you got to do something about it. And when I started the Brain Performance Center in 2009, I said, I don't use those two words anymore. It's not mental health. It is brain health. The brain is an organ, just like the heart. And I'm always amazed if we think there's something wrong with our heart, we are in to see a cardiologist within the first appointment we can get. We wake up and we're just like, oh, I don't know if I can do it today. I don't know if I, you know, I feel anxious from the moment I get up and I know I go in and my team can tell when I'm anxious. I just don't know if I can show up. And then we have a nasty conversation with ourselves. Come on, man, power through. Suck it up, buttercup. Those aren't the right conversations, you know? And if we look at the brain as an organ, I mean, it weighs 3 pounds. It's 80% water. It's just like any other organ that you have in your body. And as we age, particularly, I know females, I have got a regimen for the biggest organ we have is our skin. I take care of my skin. But I also take care of my brain because it's absolutely the biggest asset I have, the most important thing that I have, because the brain and the body keeps score of everything going on in the brain. It's one unit. And if we can get people to understand that connection, that this is one unit, that will help people understand what brain health is.
So if people are listening right now and you want to give them like 3 pieces of advice to help them care for their brains that they should be doing, what could they be doing? Like the 3 quick and easy things that they could be doing right now that could start changing in their routine to give them better brain health. What would they be?
Very, very simple. Sleep. Sleep is your foundation. All day long, you got these neurons and dendrites wiring and firing, and they're creating toxic waste. The only time those little glial cells can come out and clean that mess up is when you're asleep. So you've got to make sleep a priority. And have any of you heard the term neuroprotective diet?
No,
that's a first.
That's That's a new term that's come out, and it's a diet that's been put together, and it focuses on what the brain needs to so it doesn't get inflamed. How does it stay healthy? So your diet is just as important. You know, my mom used to say, you are what you eat, and at that, but it was so she knew it even back then. So sleep and food. And the third thing is being able, of course, exercise comes to mind, but I have to say, being able to stay present in the moment. 80% of us are either lost in the past or worried about the future. And if you can learn to stay present in the moment, then you can keep your resilience builds. And resilience is not just cognitive, it's emotional and it's social.
Can I ask a question about the diet? Because my mother always used to tell me, she was like, salmon's good for your brain. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. Okay. But it's very true. But, you know, so are blueberries. And I want you all to Google the Vibrant Diet. And this was put together by a group that I'm part of to look at. They looked at all the diets that, you know, been recommended for senior citizens and reviewed them all and found that. And I love this because when people ask me, well, what advice do you have for me on a diet? Well, if it comes in a bag, a box, or a can, and it's good for a year, don't eat it. And one of the big things that the study found out is the damage that processed food can do. So that's something our listeners can really apply. And even if you have to go from, you know, frozen, go from canned to frozen, that's fresher.
Yeah. Flash frozen.
I have another question for you as well. And this kind of has to do with some of your elderly patients. But I know that, you know, a lot of the conversations we've been having on this show lately, you know, people our age, I know in our family are dealing with caring for parents. You know, as people age, you know, one of the things that we're dealing with are, you know, dementia, Alzheimer's is a thing with, you know, our parents and stuff like that. Do you have patients that are older that are dealing with, you know, memory loss and dementia and Alzheimer's and stuff like that? And for people that are the children of people like that, what is your advice on the best way to care for somebody that's going through that?
Well, I think that to start with, do a mind shift. Stop thinking of it as an aging population. Think of it as longevity, because the fastest growing age group right now is 85 and above. Wow. And 45% of Alzheimer's is preventable. So, I'm already seeing it. I'm already seeing this. I'm seeing that. That doesn't mean you can't do something about it. And it ties into those three things that we talked about earlier. Your sleep, and your diet, exercise, and staying mentally sharp, clarity. And there are things that you can do to help them do that. Connect them socially. What I see and my mom was in an assisted living home, and I went every day. No, maybe I stayed 10 minutes. Maybe I stayed an hour. Maybe I took her with me. But I saw so many people there that were so lonely and so non-connected. If you can keep your parents connected on some level, whether it's their church, whether it's, you know, their Zoom meetings, seeing their grandkids, that social connectivity will do more for their mood and motivate them.
Yeah.
It's good advice.
I know that.
Yeah. It's a thing, you know, we talk about burnout a lot on the show, and I know that's a thing that's happening with people in our age group. Caregivers are a big thing where there's caregiver burnout. People try to figure out financially how to care for your children and also your parents at the same time, because caregiving facilities, they ain't cheap. I mean, it's something that kind of we're going through right now. It's the facilities, and then also, you know, how to handle a parent that's going through these kind of brain health challenges with memory loss and all these things. It's a lot. And I know that the stress that it can put on the children of a person who's suffering from that. I mean, you must see a lot of that at the brain health, at the Brain Performance Center.
Well, and I do. And when I can tell somebody is stressed out, I say, you know what? Stress is a brain state.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's going to be there forever. And I will. You think it's easy to get out of? I said, no, but I know that I can breathe into it. When I focus on my breathing, when I just try to get good deep breaths in, and when I exhale, I push from the bottom up. You change your breath rate, you'll change your heart rate. Yeah. You get those two to dance together. You create heart rate variability, and that's a sign of wellness.
Yeah. Now, how do we get this, to be more in the mass market, getting more people? Where is your line of work and going with the current healthcare system that we see? And how do we get more people talking around this? What's your work look like around getting the whole world to
how do we mainstream
like
it? How do we get more people?
More people need to hear this. More people need to hear this. 100%.
Well, thank you, Isaac, for asking that question, because I'll tell you, in 2021, I opened the Brain Performance Institute, and that is focused on working with organizations to create psychological safety. I mean, I have worked with some very senior people. I'm like, man, if you don't go to work, you're going to get fired. I don't care if you're a senior VP. You're going to lose. And they're like, oh, but I think I'm untouchable. Nobody is untouchable after a period of time. And psychological safety is something that when we feel safe, our brain performs better, our focus is better, our clarity is better, the way we interact socially with teammates is better, and we can regulate our emotions more. So I think that we've got to take it to a whole new level. It would be very helpful if insurance would cover the work that I do at the Brain Performance Center. And if an insurance plan has a flexible spending or health savings, then yes, it is covered. But there's where a real shift needs to be made, is on defining. And it goes back to, the brain is an organ, just like the heart.
Yeah.
Why are we paying for every little burp? I mean, we should. That maybe happens to the heart or the liver. What about the brain?
Yeah, great question. Dr. Lee, we are running out of time, but one question before we go, and it's a goofy question, but I have to ask it because you made reference to when you got your taste back earlier, and I got to ask, when you got your taste back, what was the first thing you ate? I got to know.
Well, I put Cholula on everything I ate so I could taste it. So the first thing I did was quit drowning everything in Cholula.
Hey, we got a similar thing. My wife always says, you use too much hot sauce. Can you just try this before you put it? So that's a great one.
Amazing. Dr. Lee, thank you so much for spending time with us. That was really enlightening. That was super informative. I really appreciate
it. It was amazing.
All of that. Amazing stuff. And if you want to hear more from Dr. Lee Richardson, you can buy her book, Tune Your Brain On and Get Your Game On. You can find her at the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. Dr. Lee Richardson, thank you so much for joining us on Driven by Purpose. We appreciate you.
Thank you,
Dr. Lee.
Thank
you for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Lee.
You might see me in Dallas at some point. I'm fascinated.
That's right.
Well, come see me, Mike.
All right.
It's not impossible.
Yeah, no kidding. Everybody, thank you for watching Driven by Purpose. Remember, tell a friend and tell a friend and tell a friend. Like, subscribe, share, comment. If you have comments, quotes, anything you want to share, please leave a comment. We will respond. Share, follow us on social media. You know what to do. You've been watching the episodes. Share it. Tell everybody. That's how we grow the community. Everything that you heard here today, people need to hear this stuff. Send it out. Share this stuff. Come on. You know the drill. We appreciate you. We will see you on the next episode. Driven by Purpose. See you guys.